Well, that's true. He also understands the success. He pointed out right away that within the next couple of months, about 60,000 people were killed. And he says it must have ended at that point because it disappeared from the media, which it did, while another 200,000 or so were killed with U.S. arms flowing in, and then the British taking over when the genocide, and that's what it was, really reached a peak, going on until 1999, as I mentioned. Like the remarks of Sofer, these ought to also be committed to memory by anyone who's concerned with international law or human rights, and for that matter, anyone who values their freedom. And it's telling that it's expunged from history, like Sofer's remarks, in fact, like all of these events, in fact, everything I've mentioned, out of history, wrong story. Well, again, those are historical universals are pretty close when countries are powerful enough to get away with it, and when the intellectual culture is subservient enough to play that game, as it usually is. Actually, none of this is really left to inference. It's all stated pretty clearly. So Dean Acheson, elder statesman who was an advisor to the Kennedy administration, gave an important talk before the American Society of International Law in 1963, in which he explained, I'll quote him, that if there is a challenge to the power, position, and prestige of the United States, then the propriety of the U.S. response is not a legal issue. He said that international law has its points. He said it's useful to gild our positions with an ethos derived from very general moral principles which have affected legal doctrines, but that's it. It's not to be adhered to be used as a weapon or to gild our positions. The supreme cynicism of these remarks derives from authentic power. For someone like Acheson, there's no need to resort to the kinds of pretenses that deface intellectual journals, and journals of opinion, commentary generally, academic writing, and so on. And he can just tell the truth, and nobody cares. That's good. He should. You know, nice to hear it straight out of the horse's mouth. The internal record, if you bother to look at it, is exactly the same. And that goes way back to the beginning. The National Security Council was established in 1947, just at the time of the founding of the United Nations and the UN Charter, which outlawed the threat of use of force in international affairs. The first memorandum of the National Security Council in 1947 was concerned, NSC 1, was concerned with Italy. There was a lot of worry about Italy at the time. There was a powerful anti-Nazi resistance in Italy, worker-based, that in fact liberated most of the country. It's the first act of the British and the Americans who entered Italy from the south and then went up to the north was to disband and dismantle the resistance and to restore the fascist structures. But still, they were pretty, the labor-based resistance movement was quite strong and had a lot of prestige. There was an election coming up in 1948, and it was very likely that the communists who were based on it would win the election, which caused a lot of problems. That's what NSC 1 was about. At that point, the U.S. thought it probably had a way to control the elections, namely by withholding food. The country was starving, by reinstating the fascist police to break strikes and so on. That was all pretty powerful weapons. But they weren't sure they were going to work. So NSC 1 discusses what would happen if the communists took power by legal means in a democratic election. And it determines, this is internal records later declassified, that in that case, the U.S. would declare a national emergency, put the Sixth Fleet in the Mediterranean on alert, and begin to support paramilitary activities inside Italy to overthrow the government. That's NSC 1, exactly at the time when the U.S. and other countries were declaring solemnly that the threat of use of force in international affairs is illegitimate. Not everyone agreed. In the internal deliberations, George Kennan, who's considered the leading humanist in the system. He was opposed to that because he thought they ought to take much harsher measures. He thought that they ought to carry out these measures even before the election, just not to take a chance. But he was sort of quieted down and convinced that other measures like starvation and violence would probably work to swing the election, as indeed they did. Well, that's NSC 1, and the practice continues. We've actually just seen a rather striking example of it, namely the bombing of Afghanistan. Rather pointedly, the United States did not request, in fact, refused to request Security Council authorization for that, which would have made it legitimate, maybe right or wrong is another question, but legitimate at least within the framework of international law. There's a lot of debate about whether the ambiguous resolutions actually justify the bombing, but it's all beside the point, because it all could have been clarified very easily just by asking for a resolution to endorse the bombing, which would have certainly passed. The five countries with a veto wouldn't have vetoed it. Britain reflexively goes along with the United States. France has enough of an imperial legacy so that it certainly wouldn't object to bombing some third world country. As for Russia and China, they're very enthusiastic about the bombing because they're seeking US endorsement and authorization for their own massive atrocities in Chechnya and Western China. So therefore, they're delighted in principle to support this. So there was no chance of a veto. But the US just did not want the authorization for very good reasons. If you ask for authorization for an act, that implies that you need authorization, that you're not entitled to use violence at will. And it's not a wise move to do that. I mean, if you're, say, a mafia don and you want to collect protection money from someone, you don't get a court order. That would, even if you could, I mean, that would entail that you need some authority. And a really lawless, violent state that's committed with determination to act like an international mafia don is right to reject authorization. Now, there's even a word for it in the international affairs literature. It's called maintaining credibility. You have to maintain credibility. People have to be afraid of you. Now, that was actually the only, that was the official reason, both by Britain and the United States, for bombing Serbia, to maintain credibility. There were other reasons, but they weren't serious. And it's for the same reason the United States refused to seek extradition of Osama bin Laden and his associates. They might have been able to get it. The Taliban, in fact, offered it. But that was rejected summarily without comment, with total ridicule. And the US didn't want extradition because extradition, to ask for extradition, again, entails that there's some authority that might rule on whether what you do is legitimate. And if you're the world ruler, you don't want any such you don't want any implication that there is such an authority. Well, all of that tells us quite a lot about international law, and you can kind of measure the significance that's given to international law and the intellectual culture by asking how often any of this comes up. The answer to that inquiry is zero, which tells you something. I'll put this aside, but let me just give you one last example. The last example is happened to be current yesterday, in fact. It has to do with the Fourth Geneva Convention. The Fourth Geneva Convention was executed in 1949. Its purpose was to formally criminalize the acts of the Nazis in occupied territories, Nazi-occupied territories. The power, the world power that has international responsibility for the Fourth Geneva Convention is Switzerland. It's what's called the depository power. And the International Committee of the Red Cross, based in Switzerland, is the responsible authority. Along with the rest of the world, the ICRC and Switzerland have repeatedly determined that the Fourth Geneva Convention applies to the Israeli-occupied territories. Israel alone votes against this in international forums. The U.S. abstains, not wanting to take such a clear position in violation of fundamental principles of international law, particularly given the circumstances that these were principles passed to criminalize Nazi atrocities.